Hi, everyone. The Story County Commissioners meeting will now reconvene. Moving on now to number 10. This is a workshop, discussion only. We'll take no action.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I do have a pecuniary interest that's affected by this issue. And so, using due course and caution, I'm going to recuse myself from discussions on the issue and join the audience.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. This is discussion and comments from the commissioners, staff, and the public regarding the possibility of participating in an economic development financing proposal pursuant to Senate Bill 1 of the 2015 Nevada Legislative Special Assessment, also known as SB 1. Also participating will be Jeremy Aguero, with Applied Analysis, and Corey Hunt with the Governor's Office of Economic Development. Project perimeters include constructing an affluent water pipeline from the Truckee Meadows Water Reclamation Facility to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, also known as the TRI. The estimated cost of the pipeline is $35 million, will be paid for from the proceeds of bonds issued by the state of Nevada pursuant to SB 1. The bonds would be repaid from incremental tax revenues generated within TRI. A tax increment area may be created pursuant to NRS Chapter 278C, which would incorporate all of TRI, within which a portion of the increased tax revenues would be dedicated to repayment of the bonds.
Mr. Chairman, if I may by way of introduction, I think one of the many things I loved that Congressman Amaday mentioned was the novel concept of stating things on the public record, beginning to make them public, kicking items around and having full and robust discussions on projects. This project, I've been working with a few folks I'm going to introduce here very shortly, but there are a number of components in it that go way beyond our initial involvement. This involves many others in the process. So without further ado, I will say that we've been asked to consider participating in an economic development financing proposal that was made possible through the Senate Bill 1 of the special session that you referenced in our agenda item references. And I would like to introduce three people that I know and work with closely. I'll start with the ladies first, but we have Elise Porto from Switch. This is in no particular order of presentation, trust me. But Elise is here. I've worked actually very, very closely with her boss, Adam Kramer, and Switch is a major participant in this project. Also from the Governor's Office of Economic Development is Corey Hunt, the right hand of God, Steve Hill, and the Governor. Corey is Go-Ed. When you hear Go-Ed, just think Corey, because he's our go-to guy. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce a gentleman I've known for many, many years, and he is respected and esteemed going back to his days working with Governor Gwynn, with the Nevada Legislature ongoing, with the Nevada Department of Taxation ongoing. Probably every quality financial forecast, whether it be how much the state's going to make in the next biennium or whatever it is, usually has Jeremy Aguero and Applied Analysis name stamped on that. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to come up and begin to talk and guide us through the process.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, I want to express my gratitude for the opportunity to come up and speak to you today. I also want to say a special thanks to Pat for that remarkably generous introduction. I also do want to extend my thanks not only to the folks that were previously introduced for all of their time and effort in getting us to where we are today, but I do want to extend my thanks both to your staff, who's been very thoughtful in terms of their questions and comments and have helped us get to where we are. I also want to extend my thanks to all of the legislators who provided the opportunity to even have this conversation today, and the private sector folks that have continued to invest in this state and in this county that have given rise to not only jobs but economic opportunity and, frankly, a different economic discussion than I think we were having as a state just 5 years ago. With that, I have prepared a draft document for you. It's been presented. I believe there have been copies made available to the public. It is entitled Economic Development Financing Proposal, Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center Affluent Water Pipeline Project. I'm going to do, if you will, a brief overview, walk through this document in order to provide some of the background and color for discussion, and certainly willing to answer any questions. I'll take the lead in giving the presentation. Corey's also here and others in the audience. To the extent that there are specific questions that I may not be able to answer or they would be more appropriate to answer, they're certainly here to offer any information. Mr. Chairman, I do want to make the point before I get started that this is intended, I think as Mr. Witten indicated, to be the beginning of a discussion, not the end of one. There may be questions. There may be issues that we need to continue to work through. We stand ready to provide that information and to work jointly with the county, with the state, and with those private sector individuals, as well as other local governments, to make sure that this is as transparent as possible. And I think what is relatively innovative intersection between water resource management policy and economic development policy can actually meet its full potential. So with that, the pages are numbered on the document that's in front of you. I will start on page 2. There are three component parts of this presentation, and I guess I should also pause for just a moment to indicate that this is the same presentation, unabridged and unchanged, that was given to the Governor's Office on Economic Development just a couple of weeks ago. The goal here being the introduction of this application process, and so you'll notice some of the language is reflected there, but I wanted to make sure that there were no differences between those. There are three component parts of the presentation, or at least three objectives, that I would like to go through today. Number one is to provide an overview of the economic development financing proposal. You will note there that it does say the Story County Economic Development Financing Proposal, and the reason for that is that Story County is the one that is required by law to ultimately submit, approve, and finalize this application. But for the approval of this commission, this project does not go forward, so important in that way. Number two is to summarize the current status of the application in the preliminary submittal. There was a submittal deadline at the end of the last fiscal year, June 30th of 2017, that the application had to be put in order to have the process that we'll discuss as we go through. That preliminary submittal is there. There's a lot of work that has been done. That work continues to be ongoing as there is a clock, if you will, that started as soon as we submitted that initial application. Not complete, but certainly as complete as it could be at that point in time. The last piece is to discuss the timelines for financing and development of the project itself. How does the project work? How does this financing option that we're going to talk about today, this creation of a tax increment area, which I know, Mr. Chairman, you and your colleagues are certainly aware of, so forgive me if some of it feels a bit cursory, but I did want to make sure that we walk through each component part in case there were any questions and to ensure that the public record was as complete as possible. With that, I'll go to page 3 of the document, beginning the first element of my presentation here today. And of all of the projects that I've worked on over the past 20 years, there have been those that are complicated and those that are relatively straightforward. And this one probably falls somewhere in the middle. But what makes it interesting and a little bit challenging to explain are the number of parties that actually participate in this particular deal. You'll notice here on page 3 that there are private sector enterprises that include the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center, Switch, Tesla, and frankly other tenants of TRI. I believe there are 70 of those tenants today. There are also public sector folks that are participating in this. This includes the cities of Reno and Sparks. It includes the Truckee Meadows Water Reclamation Facility as well as the Truckee Meadows Water Authority. Sometimes those are referred to as TUMWA and TUM Wharf. I will try and use the entire name, but from time to time I tend to do that, so I wanted to make that clear. There's also the TRI GID, this entity that was created to provide services to that specific facility, which is also involved. You'll notice as we move left to right that the applicant is Story County, Nevada, and ultimately the delivery and the decision, once approved by this body, will go before the Governor's Office of Economic Development, if approved, ultimately to the Treasurer for the issuance of bonds. And I will talk more about that as we go forward and talk through it. On page 4 is a project overview. So, as was mentioned, and I think in the context, and I have a tendency not to like to use this term, but I don't know a better one for this particular project. The idea here is to have a win-win-win for everyone that is involved in the project itself. And I think this slide is intended to demonstrate exactly that. On the left-hand side of page 4, there's Reno and Sparks and Tumwa and Tumwharf. I said I wouldn't do that, and I did it on the very first one. The water reclamation facilities and the water management entity in Reno and Sparks in Washoe County has effluent water. Right? They have water that has been used, that ultimately is treated, and the vast majority of which is returned to the Truckee River. The treatment of that effluent, the processing of that, is an expensive process. It is also one that leads to significant environmental considerations. There have been times in the past, and certainly everyone is concerned about the environmental considerations and the draw that is on the Truckee. But at the end of the day, that effluent comes at a cost and needs to be treated because it is returned ultimately to the Truckee River and passed down to be used somewhere else. There have been times when the effluent level exceeds nitrate levels, and that is an environmental issue that I think everyone in the state of Nevada should be concerned about. The idea is to take 4,000 acre feet of that water and essentially move it over a 13-mile pipeline from the Truckee Meadows Water Reclamation Facility, ultimately to TRI. That effluent that has been treated by Tumwharf, forgive me for using it, it's just going to be a lot easier for me than to try and say that every time, that has been treated would ultimately move down that pipeline, receive additional treatment once it reaches the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center that could then be used for higher level economic development and investment. That is to say, the water as it exists today coming out of that is not okay to be utilized for things like cooling of a data center or some other uses for advanced manufacturing and the like. And therefore, it has to have further treatment in order to be useful and to elevate the economic development benefits of that water. That said, this is the second of those wins. The second of those wins is the fact that TRI, or the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, has the ability to utilize 4,000 acre feet of water. That water is different than the water that we may typically think of that we receive either in terms of groundwater, water that comes from the Truckee River. And that is because this is treated effluent, which makes it remarkably reliable in terms of water. In times of drought, I assure you, we will still have 4,000 acre feet of effluent water coming out of Reno and Sparks, which creates reliability in terms of that water and frankly, ensures that there will be sufficient resources to continue the development of that project. Now, the folks from Tahoe Reno Industrial Center can talk more about their water resources and the timing of that, but there is also a reduced cost associated, which is the second best water, to go out into the market and to find water either from the Truckee River or elsewhere at likely a higher cost, at less reliability, and likely to have a junior position in terms of water rights, which I will not go through. The on-site processing, which is also shown here, the delivery of that water, again, creates that reliability and enhances economic development, which is shown on the far right-hand side. Economic development is often the result of, or we think about it in terms of, I guess I should say it differently, we think about it in terms of jobs created, wages and salaries paid, tax revenues and the like, all of which we'll talk about as we continue to walk through. On page 5, looks almost exactly like page 4. However, it has the cost side of the equation. There's a $35 million cost of the project. This is the pipeline project that we're talking about here today. There's a second portion of the project, which is a $30 million investment that is required on site for both the treatment and transmission of that water once it's transferred from Tom Wharf to TRI. Now, the focus of Senate Bill 1 is the $30 to $35 million there in terms of that water project. And the Senate Bill 1 and the conversations we're having today are not specific to the $30 million, but rather specific to the $35 million. Not that the full $60 million project doesn't need to be constructed. We're talking about the issuance of bonds and the repayment of those from tax increment dollars. We're talking about it in terms of the $35 million. In addition to that, not only is there this additional investment, but I should also mention the additional transfer of water that makes this project work. TRI will be transferring about 1,500 acre-feet of water. Now, that isn't transfer in terms of giving up the use. It's essentially giving up the water rights. It is transfer in terms of the accessibility of that water such that the effluent can be accessed. And I realize there's some complication involved in that, but that we're going to let you use our water, you're going to let us use your water, is really what makes this project work. In addition to that, the Nevada Department of Transportation acquired somewhere between 1,500 and 2,500 acre-feet of water as a result of agricultural property that it is now in control of. Unfortunately, the water rights associated with that agricultural property have yet to be perfected. So folks like Switch will be working with NDOT in order to protect those water rights. So the 4,000 acre-feet of effluent that is ultimately coming through the pipeline and will be used by TRI is offset by roughly 4,000 acre-feet of water rights, if you will, that can be used to allow that effluent to flow down the pipeline and can ultimately ensure that what has to be put back into the river is put back into the river. Page 6 alludes to exactly, doesn't allude, it actually says exactly what Mr. Whitten talked about before. Mr. Chairman, you read into the record in terms of the agenda item. The program that is made possible by, that we're here to talk about today, this financing mechanism, is enabled by special legislation that was created by the Nevada State Legislature in 2015. What seemed like a wonderful idea at the outset to sort of talk about the legislation is a lot of words on a single page. But what these words actually say and what they mean is that what this legislation allows is the creation of a special district, essentially a geographic area that is bounded, and the tax increment, which means new tax revenue, not existing tax revenue, but new tax revenue, can be utilized for a project like the one we are talking about today. But for this particular legislation, the revenues and this particular project wouldn't necessarily be able to take advantage of this type of program. On page 7 is the preliminary submission that was filed. There's a few things that I'd like to note here. I've already talked about the date of the filing. It is extensive. I have brought a copy of it with me here today. I know that it's been the county's had the opportunity to at least take a look at it and review it. It's hundreds of pages long as a result of all of the requirements that GOED has in the engineering. It is available on the website for anyone who would like to see it. Contains the best available information. I do want to make two things perfectly clear. One is it remains an exercise in process. There are some loose ends that I'll talk about in a moment that we are continuing to work through. Number two is it remains subject to the approval of the Board of County Commissioners of Story County. I do want to make sure that this was made clear to the Governor's Office on Economic Development. While we wanted to make sure that we preserve Story County's place in line relative to the project, we also want to be respectful and deferential to this body to ensure that its questions are answered before that gets finalized. On pages 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 and 14, so I guess I could have just said pages 8 through 14, are the expected build-out and absorption of the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center. I don't intend to go through each one of these slides. I don't know that that would be particularly important to our conversation, but I do think what is particularly important to the conversation is the expected pattern of build-out for TRI. It will be important as it is only tax increment that is made available to repay these bonds. You can see in 2017 on page 8 that we have some developments, including Tesla and Switch, that is included thus far. We also have in the gray areas all of the planned development that will continue to move forward. What I do want to make clear in going through here is we believe we have used extremely conservative estimates. We have only included what Tesla has indicated will be their additional development. We have only included what Switch has indicated will be its additional development. We have assumed no additional development for 5 years, which I'm sure my friends at TRI would suggest is overly conservative. We have made every attempt to ensure that as we expect new development to occur and the taxes that are generated by it, that we are trying intentionally to underestimate that such that the estimates that ultimately generate revenue that will be used to repay the bonds are conservative. We have also made the estimate, we've also included as an assumption, that roughly 50% of all of the activity that ultimately happens from today all the way through 2045, that 50% of that will be abated, even though that may not even be physically possible, given physically possible, may not be legally permissible given the statutes as they exist today. Mr. Chairman, that takes me really to page 15 as part of part two, which summarizes the current status of the application. If you'll notice there, the summary of off-site project costs here, you'll see the pipeline construction cost, the pump station cost, and then the contingency and engineering cost total $28.936 million. As you'll note from the earlier page that I presented to you, the estimate was $35 million, and here it says $28. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but the reason that we did estimate it at $35 million is because interest rates could potentially go up. There were contingencies built into that, and we wanted to make sure that there was some flexibility in the event that that happened. On page 16, talks about what will be used to repay the amount of those off-site or that pipeline improvements. These include real property tax, personal property tax, modified business taxes, and sales taxes. I'm not going to go through each one of these in excruciating detail, but I would like to point out just a couple of things. Yes, sir.
When you say off-site, you're talking just the pipeline?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right.
To the industrial park.
Right. So forgive me. The terminology that I'm attempting to use imperfectly, so is the pipeline and everything that happens outside of TRI, and then we refer to on-sites as everything that happens on the physical plants of the treatment and distribution. With that, on page 16, these are the revenue sources that Senate Bill 1 allows the allocation of increment to the project to be used. A couple of things that I think are, probably three things that I think are very important. Number one is the differential between baseline and increment. The legislation is very clear that in before the tax increment area is created, that any taxes that were generated in the fiscal year before that do not get allocated to the project. They are redistributed to the state, to local governments, and to school districts in the same fashion they were before the tax increment area was ever created. Number two is the fact that some of these taxes are not local taxes. There's been some misconception in going through, particularly from the media and others, that imagine the fact that all of these revenues would come from Story County. And the answer to that question is no, it wouldn't be that way. Things like the modified business tax, for example, never even come to the county at all. Those are revenues, a portion of those revenues would be taken that would otherwise go to the state's general fund, be redirected into Story County to offset the payment of these bonds. The last piece that I think is important is that it's not as though all of the revenues that are going to be generated by TRI are going to be allocated to the repayment of these bonds. I will get to that in just one moment, but the maximum annual debt service that is expected on these bonds is roughly $2.1 million per year. That $2.1 million, the first $2.1 million from the increment will be used to repay the bonds. All of the revenue that is generated after that amount is then redistributed to all the local governments, school district in this case, and the state based on the proportion in which it paid in. So the idea is that tax increment is created to ensure security for the repayment of the bonds, but only that amount is allocated to that repayment. Everything else is redistributed to the state or local governments in a manner consistent with how taxes are imposed, collected, and distributed otherwise. On page 17, we provide just a look at what the expected revenue is based on total public revenues net of abatements between 2017 and ultimately 2047. I realize the number is relatively small there, but if you imagine where the $2.1 million line is, that would show what would be necessary in order to have sufficient money to pay the principal and interest payments on the bonds. The balance of this money would ultimately inure to the benefit, again, of state government, local government, school districts, and the like. In one way of looking at it, the idea would be protecting incremental economic development by ensuring water resources. You're essentially investing $2.1 million to ensure these other revenues come to play. Now, I don't want to suggest even for a moment that every projection is going to happen exactly how it's shown here. I don't believe that's the case. And as one client told me, every projection is wrong. Some of them are just better than others. Right? What we believe is that we have been conservative in these estimates, and that if we look at the trend in terms of TRI thus far and what is in the development pipeline and what companies like Switch and Tesla are doing, we do believe that these are achievable estimates here. On page 18, looks almost exactly like page 17. This is the tax increment. So this is the additional money that would be available ultimately to pay those bonds. And again, as was talked about a bit in the meeting with the governor's office on economic development, we have some concern in the early years given the fact that we have been conservative. With most projects, once we get further to the right-hand side of the chart, clearly we expect to have substantial additional revenue, more than what's needed to cover that principal and interest payment. But again, we have made the very conservative assumption that only companies like Switch, only companies like Tesla, and some other very modest investments would take place over the first 5 years, again, which we believe to be somewhat conservative. Page 19 provides the bond financing summary. How are these bonds structured and what do they mean? What you see is the par amount and the premium, which essentially means that we're going to issue those bonds at a premium. The interest rate will be a little higher as a result of that, estimated at roughly 4%. The term would be 25 years. The amount of the annual debt service would be $2.1 million. To ensure this ramp-up period can take place, it would be an interest only for 2 years. In conversations with the state treasurer, they have required minimum coverage of 3 times, the required debt service reserve of 1 year. Those last two are ones that I just want to emphasize. Because that required coverage is 3 times, that means in order for the treasurer to issue the bonds, he has to believe that the TRI, this tax increment that I talked about, will be that we will generate $3 for every one that is required to make the principal and interest payments. In addition to that, they want to take 1 year's worth of debt service. So they'll take $2.1 million and they will put it in the bank to ensure that the state has sufficient revenue. So even if somehow TRI was to generate zero revenue in the first year, they would have $2.1 million to make those debt payments. On page number 20, you can see the sources and uses. The sources are $31.5 million. The uses are the project fund, the debt service reserve fund, the cost of issuance, the underwriters discount, and then a contingency that, in all honesty, is just used to balance out that equation. But you see that the sources and uses match. Again, the $35 million is merely to ensure that there is some flexibility in the event that interest rates increase. On page 21 is the bond repayment schedule. Each year during the 25-year repayment timeline, I have put in an orange line there just to show you where the interest-only payments are. Beneath that is a fully amortizing note. On the far right-hand side is the coverage ratio. Again, you see the required 3 times there in 2019. You also see that that ramps up to in excess of 30 times coverage by the time we get, let's say, to 2033 in the out years. Page 22 simply provides the same chart but looks at it in a graphical format. Again, the early years being more concerning. As the project continues to develop, the increment is necessary. Again, we need 1x coverage to make the principal and interest payments. On page 23 is an outline of pending agreements. These are the ones that were actually required in the initial GOED application. GOED has subsequently sent us over 15 items that they think are necessary in order to complete the Story County economic development proposal. We are working on those actively. The goal would be to get those completed, submit them to Mr. Witten so that they can be reviewed by the county in advance of your forthcoming meetings. These will require additional work, but I assure you that on all fronts they are moving forward. On page 24 is the project development timeline. This is, of course, tentative, but we wanted to show when the applications would be required, when the bonds would theoretically be issued, when the funding would occur, when the project would be constructed, and ultimately when water would be delivered. Had the opportunity to talk to some of the folks at TRI in terms of what their water resources are, the goal being to ensure that the project is able to deliver water on the time that it is needed. We believe that this timeline allows for that. Mr. Chairman, I do appreciate the indulgence of the committee, as the commission, as I walk through this presentation. Again, I want to express my thanks and my commitment. We will continue to work hard with your staff to continue to move this, should that be the desire of the commission. And thank you. If there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Well, thank you, Mr. Aguero. Do you have anything you want to start with here, Jack?
I guess having some assurance that if the county moves forward to build this pipeline, that there, what guarantee or structure is put in place to make sure that the industrial part does their part?
Sure.
We don't want a pipeline that goes to nowhere to speak of.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, with your permission. First off, it's an excellent question. I'm sorry that I didn't cover it in my presentation. The first half is that the Governor's Office on Economic Development is going to require, at least based on all the feedback that they've given us, and I'll certainly defer to Corey here if I miss this in any meaningful way, is what the Governor said during the Governor's Office on Economic Development meeting is that everyone has to have skin in the game. This is what's commonly said in some of these meetings, and in this case, that is making sure that this $30 million in terms of on-sites are constructed. So that commitment letter is one of the 15 things that is required. That commitment letter is going to say that essentially TRI, the development team, is going to be required to guarantee the construction of that treatment facility and those distribution facilities to ensure that there is no pipeline to nowhere, as you mentioned.
Who will own the pipeline?
I think ultimately the GID will own the physical pipeline, although I don't know that I've ever had that question. I'll have to go back and find out exactly how that actually plays out, so forgive me.
Who's going to be responsible for maintaining it and all that?
Well, that there'll be money that will be all required to be set aside for all of that to happen. I'm going to have to go back and look at the agreements to see exactly whose responsibility that will ultimately be. On the on-sites, it's relatively clear. On the off-sites, I want to make sure that I'm answering your question appropriately. So I'll follow up on that one.
But the presumption is not Story County. It's either Tumwater or potentially Tri-GID.
Thank you. What I was told is that, first of all, let me answer your question. The answer to your question is no, it would not be Story County under any circumstances. And as I'm told, it's going to be Tumwa that would be required to handle that portion of the project. Again, respecting the fact that all of those agreements are currently in process at this point, I want to make sure that I go back and review those with due deference to those that are here.
Okay. For the record, Bob Sater with Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. At this point, it's contemplated that TRI General Improvement District will own the pipeline and the pump station and all of the on-site facilities. That's the way the agreement with the City of Reno and the City of Sparks is currently in draft and done. Now, the only change to that on the pipeline would be if the Governor's office makes a decision that during the time
that the bonds are still owed, that the pipeline ought to be owned by another entity, the state or somebody else. That's been a subject of conversation, but no decision has been made. So at this point, we're going forward on the assumption that TRI General Improvement District will own, manage, and repair, replace the pipeline.
Okay. Along these lines, too, thank you, Mr. Stater, for being here. The improvements that are going to be, the on-site improvements, the $30 million expense, that's going to be at the expense of the TRI GID?
No. Under your service plan for the GID that the county approved, the developer, the ultimate responsibility will be Tahoe Reno Industrial Center to build the on-site improvements and dedicate them to the GID for operation. So it, now the developer has agreements with other of the customers, such as Switch, such as Tesla, such as others, for some participation in that. But ultimately the requirement is for developers to build it and then dedicate it to the GID.
Okay, just to follow up, just so I'm perfectly clear that this will not increase the debt of Story County's share for improvements in the park. Story County would not be responsible for any of this infrastructure. It's going to be strictly dedicated to the TRI GID.
That is correct.
At no expense to Story County.
That is correct.
Mr. Chairman, it's exactly like we process all GID related matters right now, whether it's the treatment facility, pipelines of either three types, really, freshwater or the two types of effluent. The county is not involved fiscally in any way. It is processed exactly like Mr. Sater was saying, paid for by the developer and then deeded over to the GID.
Okay, thank you.
If I may, sir, I want to take a couple of minutes here while we're focused on the analytical side and not necessarily the bringing together of all the parties, if you will, making sure that this agreement matches this agreement and works with this agreement. A couple things have come up in our discussions. And there is, and we've had, I want to thank Hugh Gallagher and also Keith Loomis, who have been there essentially every step of the way as we've gone through this process to date. And one of those is, okay, there's potentially going to be, we're going to be responsible in some part for repaying from the increment increases of revenue up to $35 million. Well, that's had a lot of staff time and discussion time with everybody involved, Mr. Sater included. So there's really two elements to this part that I want to point out. One, as I mentioned, Jeremy is probably the state's best, if not perhaps the entire Western state's best at forecasting in terms of accuracy. And he's super conservative, which fits, I think, our appetites as far as he and I are concerned. But they're Jeremy's estimates. And no disrespect to Jeremy, and he's taken this very positively. We would intend probably, there are multiple steps. There is this workshop. There may be the approval of submitting the final application. None of this binds us at that stage. The real binding part is when GOED within 45 days comes back and says this is a qualified project, your application is complete, now you may designate a tax increment area. At that point in time, we're in. Sometime prior to that, and soon, maybe as soon as today, the county uses a gentleman by the name of Marty Johnson in Las Vegas. Marty's our debt management consultant firm. He prepares our annual debt management report. He also does the school districts, I believe. And we will be going to Jeremy, or excuse me, we will be going to Marty and saying, here's Jeremy's basis. A, are they realistic? B, are they conservative? You know, are they factually based? As Jeremy said, every analysis, every projection is going to miss its mark. It's just a matter of by how much and when and where. But we want that third-party independency, if you will, of the project, of Jeremy's working relationship both with Switch. The state even has their own third-party, a gentleman, if I'm told right, a gentleman by the name of Guy Hobbs that will, you know, that is also equally respected in state financial histories. So that I think we're following a very similar path with the state. We're choosing not to use Mr. Hobbs because he is affiliated with the state, and there probably isn't a conflict of interest, but certainly could be perceived as one. So we have our independent test. The state has their independent test, and that's kind of our process there. The other side that I was wanting to make sure we put out there, and I have to be careful of my words here on this one. So $35 million is a lot for the county to put his name on the line, no matter how valid the projections are and no matter how they come to be true. That said, you know, we're looking at this currently as an investment in the future from whatever we call it, the waterfall amounts, the spillover amounts, those types of things. You have to invest in order to reap the rewards down the road. However, that doesn't necessarily mitigate the risks. There have been a lot of discussions, and there still will be discussions over legislative intent, over verbiage in SB1 that talks about, is this an obligation of the state or an obligation of the county? We are planning on, should you ever consider this for approval, of turning around and working in partnership with TRI and Roger and the team to say, okay, we need that backstop guarantee, if you will. We're putting our good faith on the line for $35 million. Coincidentally, we owe TRI right now about $45 million under the developer agreements. So we want to tie those two together, not to make the payments, but basically as, if you will, collateral in many respects to guarantee those. So those are the presumptions I wanted out there early that we've staffed. There have been a couple others. The proposal that the NPARC stuff the county won't participate in. So I think we've worked over the course of the last 60, 90 days. I think you said you were in 70 days, so it hasn't been much more than that for me. But those are the types of things we're trying to make sure we mold into the process to protect the county.
Well, in my previous conversations with you, you've satisfied most of my questions, I think. I still have some reservations on a few of them. But with that being said, I've covered a lot of territory here. I'd like to open it up for some public comment on this. Did you want to follow up first? Okay. Because I'm sure there are going to be some questions we have from the audience that things that that I haven't thought of, or Jack or you, and so it's good to have it up. So,
thank
Steve, you. Eric, you want to come up? Okay.
Good morning, Steve Ayer, local resident. I absolutely love what you guys are doing with TRI. That's just phenomenal for the county. And two questions that I have is, you talk about property taxes. Whose? Is it everybody, or is this strictly TRI property?
You go ahead, Pat. You want
to? Yeah. By defining a tax increment area, which will be commonly known as TRI, nowhere else, nowhere outside of TRI, nowhere in Virginia City, nowhere anywhere but TRI, it is those taxes and those taxes alone. And actually, again, drawing that baseline, the taxes that we either get today or will be owed today based on values in buildings such as Tesla. Once those abatements come off in 2024, there is a baseline. So those funds continue to come to the county. They are not diverted or redirected for payment. So the answer again, Steve, is definitely properties inside the tax increment area, which, if it's defined, will be defined as TRI.
Oh, good. Okay. And then the other one is, how does this affect the taxes that we're expecting to be generated for the county to help us out that have been here forever? And
it's given us an opportunity, if you will. And I think the opportunity, and I briefly mentioned this at the last meeting, but I think these are great questions to begin to get out. As we look at tax rollbacks that have been suggested by the commission, tax rollbacks bring advantages and disadvantages. It is difficult in economic downturns, which we know will come again. Okay, it's difficult to see the benefit because of the state caps of 3% and 8% that in reality don't become 3% and 8%. For some counties, they became 1% or less than 1%. Because of there's multiple breaks and governors on the process. So the long story short is what it's caused us to do, and I did, again, briefly mention this last time. We are looking in earnest, working with Jeremy. We'll be working with Marty Johnson as well
on taking a different approach, perhaps through the rebate systems. If we rolled your tax rate back by a dime right now, you know, what's the meaning? You might save $3. Good for you, good for all of us. But as we may need someday to ratchet it back up, particularly out in Tri, when you ratchet it up, it doesn't go back to that $3. It goes back, you know, it might go back 30 cents. It might take 3, 4, 5 years. So we think working with Jeremy, and this has been Hugh's baby all along, we think the rebate process is a more flexible, nimble approach, and we'll probably have more meaning to everybody when the day is done, but we're not there yet.
Okay, it's people like my dad and other seniors around here that are going, we've been supportive of this, but what's good for me, you know, because you're putting off taxes down the road, so that's the question I hear all the time is, all right, how does this benefit me?
Us too. And again, I think where it benefits is it better ensures the long-term future with more growth, because the taxing models, and I think Jeremy would agree with me, taxing models and growth are hand in hand. If you're not growing, you're stagnant. And, you know, I think the benefit to us, because I'm in the same exact boat as you,
yeah.
I am your dad, tell him hi, by the way. But I think the benefits to us will be a better insured future, no guarantees, but better insured, that we will continue to see growth with these new companies coming in. And in respect to Switch is already here, but they're only at the tip of the iceberg. They got a long way to go. So I hope I've answered your question.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Okay. Nicole Bart, you have your hand up?
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. Why is the county paying a development cost? This is a $65 million project to bring water to TRI, for TRI then to turn around and sell to the businesses at the center. And they're asking the county to foot an infrastructure bill for half of it on something that we're not even going to own. And in order to float that, we will be taking revenue out of TRI to pay that back, which, regardless of whether you call it increment or not, essentially does take money out of our pockets that can be used elsewhere in the community to develop it. So I'm confused on exactly what is it that we're getting out of this. In addition, we have a $45 million debt, which is a great public-private agreement with TRI, and I thank Lance and Roger for allowing us to have that. But now we're incurring a $35 million debt on their behalf, and we're getting nothing. We're not getting a cut of what they're selling the water to the companies. We're not getting a decrease in the $45 million debt that we have with them. Plus, I haven't heard what other or additional financing there was looked at to do this. We heard earlier this morning with Fulcrum that had a hundred and whatever million dollar bond that they were looking at selling in the private marketplace, not on the backs of taxpayers. Why can't this be that type of financing? Why does this have to be on the back of Story County taxpayers? A lot of questions in there, but my net here is we're getting nothing out of this. We're paying for it. It's coming out of our pocket, and there may be another way to finance it.
That you'll explain it better, but wasn't this on this taxation was going to be on new business only?
New growth.
Not on existing growth that's in the park right now. It would only be on new business that this incentive of bringing water in would bring in new businesses. So we would be getting these other taxes rebated from the state on sales tax, modified business tax, those taxes which we don't get any part of that right now. So we'd be using those taxes in conjunction with the real and personal property taxes that would be funded in to...
But isn't that spending money that in the future that we're going to need in the future? I mean, money now is a bloom screen.
The argument on the other side might be is that these new businesses, this is how it's been proposed to me, that these new businesses aren't going to come in unless this project is done. because they're going to need this affluent water in order to operate out there. So it's not like we're giving up something that we already have. It'd be giving up something of the increase in business. Now, once the pipeline is paid for, then all of those taxes would filter across all the different entities in the county.
But again, it is a developer expense.
How about if we can answer the questions as they come up? They're a whole lot easier than tracking 8 or 10. So I'm going to kind of take a hypothetical that is probably pretty darn sure to happen. If you take a look at how many developable acres Tesla has, 2,000, 2,500, 3,000, okay? They're on less than 1,000 acres right now. They just introduced and delivered on the first Model 3s. They have a Model Y in the works and God knows what else, semi-trucks. You know, rumor has it, and these are not rumors that we're making up, which I detest, and they're not rumors that Switch is coming right to us and saying, hey, but rumor has it more and more is going to be manufactured here in Nevada, here in Story County, by the Teslas of the world. They need a more affordable, more available supply of water. So what are we getting for it? You know, again, go back to, if you haven't looked at Jeremy's presentation yet, go to his website even, because there are literally hundreds of pages of analysis. But as you begin to look, the waterfall spillover, if you will, that we would receive if the projections come to be true, that's what we're getting. And I can sit here and argue all day long with folks like you, and you're not right or wrong. I'm not right or wrong. It's just a glass half full or half empty. You know, on standard abatements of 50% on personal property tax, we still get the real property tax. We still get our share of 50% of the personal property tax. We get building permits, you know, up the wazoo. Building permits are not involved in this process at all. It is simply the four elements that Jeremy said. So my answer to your question in really simplistic terms, I look at it as an investment. Do we want to invest $35 million, to be very truthful with you, at little to no risk? I'm not dumb enough to say we don't have risk, but with the backstop that we're requiring, essentially, and with statements that are made both in the legislation and at the GOED board meeting, where the intent of the legislation was this is a full faith obligation of the state of Nevada, I think we're making very little risk with a very substantial...
Even less risk would be if TRI did what Fulcrum did, gets a note, turns around, and sells it, and potentially sells it to a Tesla and a Switch, and those companies at TRI, they're going to be using this water. They drop more money than $3 million on the way to the... $30 million on the way to the bank. $30 million is nothing to them. So if they were to set... If you were to have a note or a bond that TRI did, they could raise the money for the pipeline at $35 million by selling it and finance their other $30 million possibly in the same way. Why put it on our backs? The net-net of benefiting the county would be the same. Look at a different financing scheme. I don't know that it makes sense for us as taxpayers to bear this burden when it looks to be a developer expense and we own nothing in the interim.
Let me take just a minute, and again, I'm not a spokesperson for TRI. I've just worked with them for... close to 20 years, 18 years, I think. And I could share with you and the public some general comments that I've garnered over the years that I think I've even heard Commissioner Gilman state in public in here. TRI didn't have all that much land to sell. They're essentially, you know, getting down. So what's TRI going to benefit from this if that land's already sold? Little to nothing, in my opinion, other than what available acreage is left. What's TRI investing? I think we count $7,500 an acre foot on 1,500 acres. When I did the math the other day, that's $11 million at today's value. You know, on top of that, you know, the GID is, or the developer, excuse me, is fronting the $30 million for the in-park stuff. So I think, in terms of the words that were used, skin in the game, I think we've got an awful lot of skin in the game with TRI.
This is a developer expense, and I really don't think it's a good use of our money and our gunpowder on borrowing.
Can I give you one more analogy, though, just before you leave? Because I'm not going to say I haven't had the same thoughts as you, and I haven't discussed them at length with the players. I look at it this way. All we are doing is building the highway to Tri in this case. It's a highway that will take treated effluent water that helps the city of Reno, helps the city of Sparks, the win-win-win that Jeremy has referred to. We're building the highway. The rest of it is up to the business.
I hear that, Pat. We're getting stuck with a developer expense just like the rail terminus and all the other stuff. Sorry.
I disagree.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Commissioners, again, Sam Toll from Gold Hill. I'd like to echo some of the things that Ms. Bard brought up because I really think that it's important for everyone to recognize what it is we're asking to encumber ourselves with. So basically, we've got a $45 million credit card that's maxed out right now. Interest rates are zero. Nobody's asking us for payments, but that debt still exists. We're now being asked to fill out an application for a $35 million credit card, and those monies that are going to be used to pay for it, the $2.1 million per year based upon new business, as you've described, that's going to come as a result of putting in this, again, what I agree with Ms. Bard is a developer-based expense that is benefiting them. We benefit indirectly, but it's their business that is going to benefit directly from it. So, the $2.1 million that we're going to pay is going to take cuts on anything that our community may need. For example, the pool that I swam in when I was a little kid, same pool, you know, here 40, 50 years later. We've got Sean Griffin from the community chest who's had to beg, borrow, and steal money for his community development center. We've got libraries. We've got a senior center. You know, Sherry, who was here earlier today, does a great job with what she has to work with. But go to Douglas County and look at their senior center. And, you know, when we're looking at this and we're looking at who benefits, we look at following the money, you know, TRI is going to be buying the money, the water, from Sparks and Reno and the water districts that you described. They're going to be investing money in treating that, and then they're going to be selling it to their clients. There's profit involved there, and that's an absolutely legitimate business opportunity. The question is, are they going to use our $35 million credit card to make money? And if so, what's in it for us? So are we going to have our $45 million credit card cut up and have that debt excused? Are we going to step in line on the profits that are made from the water that gets sold to, instead of having our tax money pay for that, have the profits from that system take place? I left here, went to Placer County for 30 years, came back. I had a conversation with a Placer County supervisor about 2 weeks ago regarding Roseville's big expansion in housing again. And we talked about this very thing, how the developers have to pay for the sewer, the developers have to pay for the water, the developers have to pay for the pavement, the developers have to assume and encumber themselves on all that expense, so that they can make money building the houses and selling them. That's their business model. And taxpayers are not asked to invest in that and to participate in that. And so my question is, you know, as to echo Ms. Bard, what's in it for us? Why?
Okay, and I believe I've attempted to answer that, but I want to clarify two things that have been used now. One is our debt, our credit card. Okay, this is not a debt of the county. It's a debt of the state of Nevada. Pure and simple. We are participating because that, well, I shouldn't say, we may participate because those are in the provisions of SB 1. But it is not our debt. The other thing I don't know if Jeremy and I have emphasized enough is that co-participation level. If you take a look at the $2.1 million, and don't hold me to these numbers because I think we're still in the process of refining, but if you take a look at the state's participation on sales tax, they're putting in 1%, half 50%, but 1 cent of their sales tax. I have no idea what modified business tax is out there, but I can tell you it's substantial. I don't know that we've drilled down into those numbers. By the time the day's done, the state participation is at such a level compared to the county, I don't want anybody to think that the county's got to write a check every year for $2.1 million. The state's on the hook with this as well. And when we looked, I think we calculated out the other day at roughly 50-50. So We're on for about 1 million. Let me finish. And it is so important to keep focus of that. I'll tell you, I'm the same kind of guy as you in many respects, Sam. I just do not have debt. The county didn't have debt for many years. I do disagree with you on TRI. It doesn't get any better than interest-free. And quite frankly, I don't have to pay them back. We don't have to pay them back if we don't make money in any given year. If we net out the net profit or net proceeds, if you will, and it's based on 35 cents on the dollar on that interest-free. So I guess where I really want to go with this is, one, this isn't debt. Two, and I'll take you back, and what I'll do is I'll get a hold of Marty, because we've been challenged on this before. Take a look at our annual debt management report. We owe TRI $45 billion, plus or minus. That doesn't show up on our debt management report because it's not debt in terms of the legal definitions that the attorneys have gone through. So I guess I understand your concerns, but I will tell you, I don't see us as ever having to be on the hook to make a payment. And if we are, we will have an agreement with TRI that $45 million that we do owe, okay, clearly, based on money, if we're a million short in a year, guess what? We don't pay a million.
Okay, so let me then clarify and make sure I understand this correctly. So the $2.1 million, of which you've just suggested the state will share in half of, roughly based upon what they collect, and then we'll repay. Is that 1.1 or whatever the balance is left over, isn't that still something that would, if this didn't happen, if this credit card didn't exist, would be money that we would receive and be able to spend, in essence, any way we wanted to? Is it taking cuts in front of that money?
You're back to, will this happen? Is
right.
The glass half full or half empty? I would tell you, based on the projections, based on working with both GOED intimately and also Jeremy and TRI, I think there's a high probability that the level of interest, even in a switch, is not going to be there at a sustained level based on the current water situation. I don't want to paint a picture that they're out of water. They aren't. But I do want to paint that I think we are building the road, if you will, to the development, so the development can then take the rest.
Sure. And of course, my argument is, as you've heard, that we shouldn't bother to participate in that at all because we don't own stock in TRI. We don't enjoy any of the profits that they potentially make. And if we're going to be asked to float and to fund and to create a business opportunity for them, then, you know, the skin that is in the game had really better benefit us much more directly, in my opinion.
Let me answer that, if I may, since this is a workshop, and I appreciate the dialogue. I think the citizens of this county and the county itself do prosper from TRI right now. If you took a look at the budgets, at the balance sheets, at the size of the fire district back in 98, if you take a look at that, we benefit massively. A lot of what we have today, we have due to TRI. So to say that we don't benefit, that we don't get anything, I disagree.
And I totally understand where you come from. The indirect benefit is clear. Okay, so I'm going to leave you with two things. So I was a season ticket holder for San Francisco Giants for about 22 years. In San Francisco, you guys might know that I don't think that they can get into consensus that oxygen is a good thing to have in the air. Okay, so I remember participating in three different bond efforts where they tried to borrow money to build what is now the Pac Bell Park. Ultimately, Peter McGowan and Larry Baer and the other bankers involved there provided their own financing. They own now outright, without taxpayer money, one of the most beautiful places to watch a ball game that exists in the United States. And then finally, I'll just say that while I'm glad you suggested that your projections may or may not be accurate. In fact, they are inaccurate. Just how much? You know, I would suggest that we are one tweet away, or perhaps one North Korean nuclear missile test away from having all of our projections be completely annihilated. And I think that, as I have told people who come to me for business advice, which, you know, I certainly don't give them, but the only thing you can guarantee yourself of in business is your overhead. And every time you encumber yourself, every time you borrow money, every time you whip out a credit card, that's, you can't guarantee any future business. You can't guarantee anything, but your phone bill, your power bill, and your credit card bills are going to be due, and people are going to expect to be paid back. So I would urge Mr. McBride and Mr. McEvey to strongly consider what it is that we're being asked to do, and I would urge a no vote. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Mr. Thompson.
Chris Thompson, TRI project manager, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Commissioner, Mr. County Manager, Mr. Deputy DA. I think it would be good at first, thanks to you gentlemen for coming down today for this explanation. And I think it'd be good to put the prior comments in perspective. The prior comments from the previous two speakers are from folks that are local activists who have been consistently and pretty loud in their anti-business, anti-economic stance. And I'd like to just remind the commission, 3 years ago, one of the speakers went wild on local media against the Tesla deal, nitpicking it, saying Tesla's never going to work. Tesla's not going to deliver what they promise. Tesla's not going to have these kind of employees that they're talking about. And it's a bad deal. And the county shouldn't do anything in terms of engaging in the Tesla deal. And today, here we are. We have Tesla out there, 5,000 workers on site, at least, if not more. 30% of a building that's going to have 20 million square feet of operating space is already built, three floors, just like they said they would. In fact, more than they said they would. They delivered. And why? Because there was a little bit of economic development from the government. If we went with what the prior two speakers wanted to do, there'd be no such thing as economic development. There wouldn't be any partnership between government and private business. The government's job, in their view, would be adversarial, to put clamps on it, to keep it down, to control it, to regulate it, and there would be very little or no growth. So I put that out there. Secondly, our TRI has got massive skin in this game. TRI, not only on this pipeline already, TRI's funded 30% engineering plans for that pipeline, for the project that's being talked about today, was funded by TRI. Secondly, from the get-go at TRI, every paved road out there has got purple pipe or reclaimed water pipes in the ground. That has been put in since the very outset of TRI. And those expenses were borne by the master developer, TRI. Thirdly, the actual reclaimed reservoir that will hold about 1,800 acre-feet of water in highly desirable land was set aside and built to a fundamental level, that is with the basin and the dam and the pipes and the pumps, is already in the ground today. And as it stands right now, we are currently putting in more distribution system as we speak. There are pipelines going in on Electric Avenue running south out of Tesla that the master developer is funding. We are very much engaged, and we've got massive skin already in this non-potable project. Thirdly, water is the new gold. Water is what brings in high tech, such as Switch, and so that they can cool the servers and other uses for that water. It helps on manufacturing. The amount of acre feet involved in a large data center or a large manufacturing operation is huge. It's in the hundreds of acre feet of water, which is a lot. And this water is gold. And Mr. Witten is exactly right that water will allow this county to bring in more high-tech, more manufacturing. And what does that mean? The facilities we're talking about out here are in the billions in capital investment. Switch's facility at full build-out, seven buildings, 7.2 million square feet, is going to be $15 billion to $20 billion in capital investment. And that turns around into real property and personal property taxes to the county. The manufacturing building at Tesla, just the first phase of that building, the first 6.5 million square feet of operating space was estimated at $5 billion in capital investment. This water is gold that will turn into capital investment, which turns into real property and personal property revenue for the county. And I think it's I just wanted to make sure that these gentlemen had the prior comments in perspective. I don't think they represent the view of the majority of the people in this county, and we're honored to have you, and we thank you for coming into this county today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, who's next? Todd S.
As the superintendent makes his way forward, I want to kind of pre-set the stage here. When we start talking about diversion of incremental increases in taxes, the first thing we questioned was, you know, what about our partner in the school district? We're proud of our partnership. I think we're loaning a lift that the county owns for use in the school district building just so you don't have to pay additional taxpayer dollars for that. And in doing so, we found we were not involved in SB1 in any way, but we found that the language in SB1 failed to provide for input from other local government jurisdictions, in this case the school district. So that said, I value and the county values its partnership with the school district. So Todd and I have sat a bit. I've sat with several of his board members, some of whom are here today, and begun to explain. And I've also asked them to be here so they can hear it. So Todd, I just kind of wanted to set that stage. And by the way, we're also told, and we're hopefully in the process of validating, and I think Jeremy can even speak to this with his knowledge, the school's funding formulas are much different than the county's. And they get state participation through DSA, daily yes. student attendance, that kind of governs and meters, if you will, you know, what their revenues are. So we're operating under the presumption that, number one, we're only dealing with an increase, and when the day's done, it will have little to no impact on the district.
Thank you. Todd Hess, Superintendent of Story County Schools, for the record. As Mr. Witten just said, we have 40% of our Board of Trustees here in attendance, Mrs. Melissa Field and Fire Chief Jeff Nevin here in the corner. I was apprised of what was happening about a week or two ago. Again, Mr. Witten, as he just said, about 60% of our board have been made aware of what the proposal is. We're under what's called the Nevada Plan. There's 17 districts in the state. This, you know, every county in the state. We're the second smallest. Clark County is the third largest in all of America. So we have a per pupil funding rate. For us, it's right now it's about $8,100 per student. Anyways, with that, I don't think right now that there's any financial impact to the schools. With that said, I'm not the one that should be offering that opinion. What I can promise, I'm going to Ely tomorrow to meet with some superintendents. I'm going to run everything that I've learned today. I'll get some cards from you guys and get as close as I can with that. Jim Sharon is our longtime auditor out in Yerington there. He does a terrific job with the books. I'm going to make sure I run the financials by him as well. Once we have that, and we want time to be sort of critical, then I'd like to get with our trustees, write a position paper as quickly as we can, and give your opinion on that. So appreciate you listening to us. As Pat said, whether you agree with it or not, you don't necessarily have a vote, but our voice and opinion as far as the impacts on schools is terrifically important. So I want to thank Pat for including us in on this, and we'll be in touch.
And I think, Todd, one more important name, you know, in addition to Shirani and those superintendents that have seen variations, this is unique. There's not another one of these out there, but As you look at that, I think we can share the consultation of Marty Johnson. I mean, we use Marty Johnson because the school district did such a great job for many years. So we can talk to Marty as well.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. All right. More public comment? Okay.
And again, just kind of in closing, there was no action scheduled. We wanted, I hoped, to get exactly what we got, interaction with everybody, or at least those that, you know, are interested, pro, con. We're going to continue to work with the GOED primarily, and also switch, and try to get the rest of the answers in place. There are a number of moving parts on our part of this, but our goal would be right now to try to stay on those timelines that you saw at the closing of Jeremy's presentation. Our goal would be to bring this back on August 15th, for possible determination on going ahead and submitting and finalizing our application, at which time the process moves over to GOED.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Pat. All right, so that will conclude item number 10, and we'll move on to item number 11. And we'll have Mr. Gilman go ahead and rejoin us up here. Next up is item 11. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. I'd like to start on the right side of the room, as I usually do, with Sheriff Antonoro.
Just one quick thing for updates. I believe you all got invitations. Tonight is National Night Out down at Louise Perry Park. Got quite the line out set up, so hope to see you guys all there.
5 p.m., is that correct?
5 p.m.
Okay.
Except this meeting's over.
All right, let's see here. I had a list here of everybody when they walk in, but I think we've lost some of our people today, so. Well, we have Kathy Cantell out of planning. Have you got anything today? Okay. Joe Curtis, Director of Emergency Management.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe Curtis for the record. Sherry was going to cover this, but she had to get off to another meeting. And so just we've been meeting to a great degree with FEMA, and regarding the activity from January, the flooding and the snow problems and that sort of thing. We've been dealing with FEMA very effectively, and have made some changes in how we're approaching things with FEMA, in that we found out that we did not have to have a deductible for every single building in the county through our county insurance. So we've adjusted our applications to FEMA, and we're going with our insurance factors for the vast majority of the buildings. Hence, we have been meeting with the count, with the insurance adjuster and with Paul Ferrari and with a coordinator for the project of repairing all the various and sundry buildings that we have that we had damaged, and the 6 and 7 bridges that we have to look at look at the repair factors for that. So we've been moving forward with that, and I think very shortly here, probably within a week, possibly we'll start some of the repair work on the courthouse, on the exterior of the courthouse, and the bricks and that sort of thing. We're still looking at. We made some decisions on how we're going to proceed with the rest, with the repairs of the bridges in the Lockwood area. The whole series of bridges all have various and sundry damages to them. So we'll be moving forward with those as things move forward from here. Any particular questions?
If I can just ask one, Joe, or sure. Sherry had to leave.
Yeah, Sherry had to leave.
Do we have a rough number of incidents we had? I mean, is it 50? Is it 100?
Uh-huh.
Okay. can we say 100?
Damage to county infrastructure?
Of separate different items. I want to stress, sometimes we criticize pool, but I got to tell you, to boil this down to one
deductible, I think all of us are just somewhat astounded.
Yeah.
I mean, if you damage the courthouse and you damage the training center, you know, over at the firehouse, and you damage 50 other things or whatever, you know, do the math. It's a big save.
I think, in terms of, from a county loss, not the public's loss necessarily, from a county loss, I believe we have either 12 or 14 structures in the county that have damage of one sort or another that will be covered under the insurance. And that only involves one singular $5,000 deductible. We thought it was going to be five per event, and so if you calculate that out, I don't know, Manager Witten.
How much? It's a bunch.
It's a bunch. Five times 14, it's going to be 60,000 each, somewhere.
Anyway, that was my
point. Oh, I thought you were calculating
it
out.
No,
oh, okay,
I'm
sorry. I was waiting for your calculations. Just one other comment. I probably should have made it under public comment on the prior item. As we were talking about this and going back and forth with it, with the prior thing with the workshop, it occurred to me that, and it occurred to me earlier today, that when the gambling industry began forming in Nevada in the 30s, that there was an individual who was quite foresighted to bring in gambling in Nevada, in northern Nevada. It was an individual by the name of Pappy Smith, Harold's Club. And his advertising format from day one all through was that you've got to send out winners to get players. And there's probably not too many people in the room that remember that, old enough to remember that. But a thought occurred to me that that's essentially what we're looking at doing. So just quick comment on that. Any other questions on FEMA or the insurance or anything? Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay.
Thank you. Over at Public Works, Jason W. I should have called on you first. You probably need to get out of here.
Yeah. Chairman, Commissioners, County Manager, just a quick update on Mark Twain. We've been doing a lot of communication with the property owners down there to get permission to get on the properties, to start clearing out and opening up a lot of the main drainages that have been filled up over the years so we can start getting flow back through there and start alleviating some issues. So that's basically all we're working on right now.
Any questions? Appreciate it and all that.
No problem.
You getting good responses?
Very good so far.
Next up, we've got the fire marshal in attendance today. Fritz, have you got something for us today? Okay, great. We'll open up with fire chief, Jeff Nevin.
All our crews are backed up.
Over at the comptroller's office, Mr. Gallagher.
I think at this time, Mr. Chairman,
Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
Nope. County Manager Whitten.
Only one thing, and now we have a firm date because we got an invitation from NDOT. So if you can save the date for August 28th, 2017 at 11 a.m. at the South County Line, an area probably many of you have never seen, there will be a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the completion of USA Parkway, which is also known as State Route 439. So if you can be there. The highway itself may not open for another week to 2 weeks. This was when the governor was available, so think of it kind of like Carson City. They ran, walked, rode their bikes, did whatever. I think that one piece of it's opening today and another one either later today or tomorrow. So it won't officially be open, but the ribbon will be cut. That's it. it.
All right, great. County Clerk, Vanessa Stevens. Nothing today. All righty, everyone. Let's see. That will go ahead and that'll conclude our committee and staff reports. We'll move on now to item number 12. These are our board comments. We'll take no action or public comment.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gilman. Mr. McGuffey.
Okay. Of course, we just returned a few days ago back from the NACO annual national conference in Columbus, Ohio. It was a very quick trip, but I gained a lot of information out of there. Attended cash management, investing public funds courses, building arts is a partnership to bolster county's health and culture. I kind of grabbed onto that because I am highly involved with St. Mary's Arts Center and the Fourth Ward School. So it was a good trip. The weather was kind of raining off and on. It was a good trip. On another note, the county manager and I approved spending some money in the Highlands. The Highlands presidents of the associations submitted a formal letter explaining they need some money to kind of refurbish the mailboxes and put some solar lighting and maybe a new agenda calendar box there. So we'll be working with them to get that going. So, thank you.
Great. Thanks, Jack. I also attended NACO. And some of the workshops, I would see Commissioner McGuffey there. We'd be in on the same thing. Most of the time, not. Yeah. So he did show me a great place to have smoked ribs while we were in Ohio. I'd like to go ahead and mention the passing of some of our local residents. Some of you went ahead and read in the newspaper recently where former superintendent of schools, Henry Kilmer, passed away.
That's sad.
Henry was a good guy. He sat on the Piper's Opera House board with several of us and was instrumental in helping things move along there. After he retired from the school district, it wasn't long after he told me, he said, I think I'm going to go back down and see if I can find a job at the school. And I said, you just retired. I said, why would you want to go back to work at the school? He says, well, I've been going to school every day since I was 5 years old. He goes, I don't know how to do anything else. So anyway, his illness precluded him from taking another job at the school district. But he moved on to, I believe, Oregon and spent his final days with his family. So, well, Miss O'Henry was a good guy.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. Good guy. And also last week we had a local resident, longtime local resident, an architect, Dave Cormody. He passed away. He worked for Story County back in the 80s as a building inspector for a few years here. He's got a beautiful home he built up at the south end of B Street that looks kind of like a carriage house. Fabulous job for that. So.
Nice guy.
Yeah, real nice guy. And then just the other day, we lost another resident, George Kahopka. He relocated his family from Southern California out to Carson Valley several years ago. But he loved Virginia City so much that he made a point of buying a house up here so that he had a place he could come spend the weekends and with he and his wife and listen to the Comstock Cowboys. And then he would spend, he'd have company over and spend his weekends and holidays here. So anyway, we're going to miss George as well. So that's all I have for today. And now we're going to move on. See, we're going to find where the next item is. So number 13, since we bounced around. This is discussion and possible action. Consideration of possible action to approve resolution number 17-467, by which the Board of County Commissioners prohibits the discharge of firearms in wildland areas upon the determination by the Chief of the Story County Fire Protection District that the action is warranted. Mr. Loomis.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. The state has prohibited counties from really taking any action in regards to firearms in most areas. One of the places that they do say that the Board of County Commissioners can address firearms is you can issue a regulation or an ordinance controlling the discharge of firearms when it's unsafe. It's a little unusual for a statute to authorize a county to enact a regulation. Clearly, the state has authority to enact regulations, and they have a whole process under the Administrative Procedure Act by which regulations are actually enacted. But we don't have that. And so it's a little bit unusual to see that type of authority. But it is there. And so what we have done is in conjunction with the fire department and the fire district, we're presenting this resolution, which adopts a regulation saying that the Board of County Commissioners can prohibit the discharge of firearms in the wildland areas when the chief of the fire district makes the determination that that is warranted on a temporary basis. This is an action that the ranger for the Humboldt-Toyabe Forest has enacted for the forest areas within the jurisdiction of the U.S. Forest Service. And this is one that would apply to the wildland areas in Story County and would encompass private property. This board has the authority under its police power to take actions which are in the interests of the health, welfare, and safety of the public, and this would fall within that type of authority. So this is really part of the push behind this is coming from the fire district, and so what I'd like to have is either have Jeff or Fritz come up and address why they think this is a warranted type of action. And let me say one other thing about the resolution, and that is it's not going to create a misdemeanor because you have to have an ordinance to create a misdemeanor, but an ordinance takes a longer period of time to get through, and it kind of, depending upon what happens today, we would intend to follow this up with an ordinance which would create a misdemeanor. This really is, it doesn't have a lot of teeth. It's more advisory or to bring public awareness to the issue of discharging firearms in the wildland areas has caused a number of fires, and perhaps the chief can address that.
Thank you. For the record, Jeff Nevin, fire chief. This is something that was brought to our attention through our federal partners, the Forest Service, and as Mr. Loomis said, they have banned it throughout the Carson Ranger District. That's not something we're looking to do as a total permanent or temporary ban. It's more of a advisory to the residents, or more specifically the non-residents that may come up to our county and have no regard for public land or private land for that matter. Just a little bit of background. Of the 90 plus fires that have happened in Washoe County, 10% of those have been caused by target shooting. People out in the hills, not in any type of approved or improved shooting range or taking any precautions to try and limit that liability that they may have by causing those fires, having, you know, water on site or using non-steel ammunition, those type of things. So this is more of us trying to be proactive and not taking the firearms or anything like that out of the hands of the residents of this county. I am personally a sportsman, a hunter. You know, would I go out into the Cottonwoods area today and you know, go plink some cans? No, because common sense tells me that it's dry outside. We're facing record heat this week, you know, throughout the entire region. Some statistics that I looked at last night, the fuel moistures are at ultimate lows. The 1,000-hour fuels, which are trees throughout the area, are at 6 to 10% fuel moisture. They're, you know, almost dead. The one-hour fuels are dead. We see that with the cheatgrasses. That's what most of these fires have carried through, is the grasses themselves. The brush and smaller shrubs and trees are at 3 to 4%. You know, no matter the winter that we've had, the fuels are dry, and any type of spark, whether it's from a, you know, a stray bullet or a weed eater per se, can and will spark a fire. So this is more of something to bring recognition and light to residents, non-residents, that, you know, we take this serious and we want to protect the health and well-being of our residents.
Great. You guys have some questions for Jeff?
Well, where did you get your 10% number at? I haven't. I'd like to see that.
That was fact stated.
I would like to see that
news. Yeah, and speaking with the fire chief for the Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District.
I'm kind of on the fence on this one. It's like I understand the motive here. Yeah, it's dry grass out there, and no, I'm a shooter too, but I don't go out and shoot in the rocks and stuff. I have a couple places out in the islands that I shoot where there's nice sandy bank that I'm shooting at. So, and then I guess another concern is. There are owners out there in the Highlands that, you know, they shoot on their property. And so now you tell them they can't shoot on their property. Well, so, you know, there hasn't been any discussion on this. All of a sudden it's on the agenda. And so I've just kind of, I feel like I'm kind of sideswiped on this one. So I have issues with one person making the call because, I mean, you know, as soon as... Right after spring, the cheatgrass is knee high, and then it's dead in a week. So now you're talking about a whole you're going to close all shooting down for the whole summer, basically, because it doesn't get wet till fall.
No,
so I mean, you know, are you going to that's why I think there should be discussions. Can we have some designated shooting areas? I went by the shooting little shooting range there at the ice house, and it's kind of pretty rough looking, and it doesn't even look that safe. And I guess it's got maybe up to 100 yards. Is that what I understand?
Yes. Yeah.
So I guess you're standing out by the entrance somewhere, I guess, to shoot that far.
Back as I recall, yeah, back almost where the barbecues are.
So I just I'm not ready to make that commitment to okay this myself. I think there needs to be some more discussion and some other roundabouts.
Okay.
Well, if I may. You were getting ready to reply when you said it was going to be closed for the whole summer.
Yeah, we have no intention of closing a hard closure for a set amount of time. Unlike what the Forest Service has done, they closed it from, I believe it was the end of June through September. No questions. We're not looking at that. We're looking at the same way we kind of consider our red flag warnings. They may issue red flag warnings, you know, 3 out of 7 days of the week. We don't always advertise or enforce those because a lot of times it doesn't affect us. We may have moisture in this area, you know, that we had rains for over an hour last Saturday. That's increased the moistures and the fuels, you know. Will it be that same way by tomorrow? Probably not. But we're only looking for, you know, those critical factors that would, you know, really push us to say, hey, time out. None of this is going to go on.
How are wildland areas identified? By map or area, or how do you identify wildland areas?
It's basically any unimproved area. I mean, for instance, we look at the intersection of 6 and 7 Mile Canyon, down 6 Mile, and we look at the burn scars that are on the east side of that valley. All those fires were caused by stray bullets or people shooting down there. A lot of those were hundreds of acres. You know, we haven't had those in recent years, and we've been very fortunate in this county. We've only had only significant fire we've had was 3 acres, and that was a couple weeks ago down off of the USA Parkway Extension. So this is more of a proactive and not trying to take anything from anyone. Again, like I said before, I'm a shooter myself, and it's more common sense than anything else. Making people realize that, hey, it's not a good day to go out and shoot. I've had discussions in one of my other functions. I'm a member of the Jeep Posse, and we would be more than happy to come up with some type of partnership to improve that range up there. It is short. It is 100 yards. There's a picnic table over by the fenced-in area by the ice house itself. That's the 100-yard mark. People from many generations have sighted in rifles there, and I think we've been successful. I've gone there myself, brought my own targets, set them up on the frames that are there. You know, we call dispatch, say, hey, this is what we're doing, and we take the precautions to make sure it's safe.
You can't hit nothing over 100 yards anyway.
That's the point.
Here, hold this apple.
But you know what? Along these lines, you know, we prohibit burning, you know, when it's dry like this.
Yeah.
And private property or not, right?
And that is a hard closure.
So, and you think about, like, that one guy driving, pulling a trailer in Reno, he ended up,
yeah,
he lit seven fires.
Yeah, I mean, just it's dragging, more than shooters. It's just guys just dragging their chains,
well,
and
right.
Exhaust bufflers.
I know, but I think that just goes to show how dry the fuel is,
yeah,
out here.
And these are the things that we can control, shooting, burning. You know, it's the little steps that we're trying to hopefully take to make it a safer place.
How would the information be disseminated? You made the determination in the morning that you were going to apply. How would you disseminate that information to the community at large?
Well, like Mr. Luma stated, this resolution doesn't have a lot of teeth. So this is the first step. But really what would be put out, just like we do with the red flag warnings, it would be done through social media. That's the quickest, fastest route to probably 99% of the population. So that would be the key way to get this stuff out.
And you also fly red flags.
We see
a lot
of
red flags
out
we do.
in north part of the county. We're visited pretty much every weekend by folks looking for places to shoot. So there's a lot of it going on. My hunch is that an awful lot of the shooting is taking place from outside of our county, from folks that are coming from outside. So I don't know how we would disseminate the information. What would be the enforcement? Or what's the enforcement agency that would oversee that gun use within Story County?
Well, Commissioner, like I said, you know, if we were going to create a criminal offense, we'd have to adopt an ordinance. We really don't have an enforcement mechanism. This is a warning. It's a public notice kind of thing more than anything that's going to be enforceable.
I believe the major fire we had out in the TRI Industrial Park was caused by target shooting.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes, it was.
That was very significant.
Yeah.
Serious.
That was 1,200 acres.
I'm taking the side of the fire chief on this because it's a resolution. It's not an ordinance. And, I feel that we appoint him to this position because of his knowledge and you know, fire suppression and that. And I think it's a good idea from what I've heard here.
And I, if I may, and again, I appreciate the differences because you and I have discussed them at length. I would have a tendency to recommend the resolution because we're not making criminals out of people here. We're just saying, hey, here's a resolution that preaches common sense. You know, that says today's a red flag day. Please don't shoot. And actually, in reality, even though we had no authority to do it, we did that last year in many of our red flags because everybody was, you know, we put it out saying today is a day, and I want to explain a little bit about what Jeff's saying. Of those 3 days, we may or may not even do a single day because of the moisture, but there's other things. Winds may not prevail here that concern us. Relative humidities may be different. There are how much reserve crew do you have or availability to other assets regionally. So there's a number of those things. I think you're going to see probably a small handful. Jeff and I will monitor it. He'll make sure he lets me know. I can make sure I let you know. But I like the resolution process simply because let's try it. Let's see how it goes. Let's see what we experience and err on the side of safety.
Well, another thing, too, the range up behind dispatch up there at the Jeep Posse, that's where we all took our CCW classes up there. It's adequate. I mean, it's not pretty, but it's adequate for shooting a gun. I mean,
well, that's one of the things that I'm curious about is that what's going to designate an area that's if we do a blanket prohibition throughout our entire county, throughout everything that's wild land, what constitutes a reasonable place to shoot for someone that owns firearms? And it seems to me that we're putting on a blanket regulation here that has no teeth, we're creating more regulation without really an enforcement program, and we really aren't seeing any element here that would identify for folks that wanted to shoot, whether it be on private property or not, the adequate fan range or backdrops, or there's nothing allowed with this where you could actually have legalized shooting in the outlying areas. So I'm concerned about that.
But then you're only picking out the days where it's red flag day. It's only on days that it's a red flag day that you'd be asked not to participate shooting outdoors.
That's not in this regulation. Okay. There's really no definition in this regulation at all. It's just a blanket that we'll hear from a fire chief that we're going to prohibit shooting in wildland areas. And there's really no definition to any of that here. I'm concerned about that.
You know, a suggestion to you is if someone moved to continue this to the next meeting, you know, I'm hearing a couple things. You know, maybe we need to provide, except for designated areas, you know, such as the ice house or something. We can certainly factor that. And if you can't vote on it, but if I hear from a couple of you or anybody, I know how Jack feels, and I think we do have a mechanism that we can have a two-person approval process. You guys can't. There's just not enough time. It's a decision that's made that morning for that day based on information coming from the Weather Service. But Jeff can certainly recommend to me. I can concur that way. My butt's on the line with you.
And the public areas out in the highlands that are available for shooting that are clean of, you know, brush and shrubs and stuff like that?
Yeah, where I got a little canyon where there's a nice sandy bank.
But it's not our property. I think we'd have to.
That's the thing. It's a private property.
I think we should.
So what he's saying is that it's going to affect private property owners.
Definitely. Just the same.
Mr. Attorney didn't.
I just heard that this morning.
The governor says we're trespassing.
I didn't hear it.
I'm certainly not against protecting our environment and our living, and you know, we dealt with all those fires out on I-80, and it's a frightening situation. So I'm not against that at all, but I would like to see a little more thought put in before we blanket. I'm generally not in favor of more regulation in the nation today. We just keep creating regulation. We don't get rid of it. So I'd like to have a bit more definition so that we all know what we should or could do. And so perhaps a bit more conversation about it before we just blanket approve it. Yeah. That would be my...
All right. We'll be happy to do that.
Yeah. And if you have any input, any of you, on what you would like to see in the ordinance, be it recommend, concur, or designated safe places, you know, that have been identified by the fire district, you know, let us know. You know, and we'll try. We would need to know by Monday of next week, though, if we're going to try to get this on by August 15th. And the only sense of urgency there is we're in fire season now. I'd hate to have something happen on August 16th and we didn't act.
Okay, before I ask for a motion to continue this, we'll go ahead and take public comment.
Again, Sam Toll for the record from Gold Hill. I totally agree with Mr. Gilman. You know, the more regulations we have, the less free we are. Mr. McGuffey shares my sentiment that a man's home is his castle, and the fact that you know, if I was going to light off my .45 right off the back porch, that nothing could actually be done about it, makes this kind of window dressing. I think perhaps a better approach is, as we've touched on, to provide the citizens of the county safe places to enjoy their firearms. So if there's a place out at TRI where folks are going to, you know, if they're coming from Washoe County, if they're coming from outside of our county, let's give them a place to shoot that's safe, that we know is appropriate, and that's probably the best way to handle this. I'm the kind of guy who says, hey, if you're going to put a law on the books, take two off. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? Any motion to continue this?
I'll make a motion to continue item 13 to the next meeting.
8:15?
Correct.
Which is the 15th of
August.
I'll second your motion.
All right. It's been moved to second to continue item 13 to August the 15th. In this room, 10 a.m. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
And I encourage public comment on this, too.
Moving along now to item number 16. We're going to recess, convene as the Story. We're going to recess as the Story County Commission and convene as the Story County. Put your license forward. Sheriff Anthony Nora, want to join us for this? Item 17, first reading for on-sale liquor license. Applicant is Turk Cobell, managing member of Electric Avenue Hotel, LLC, located at 795 USA Parkway, McCarran, Nevada.
This is just first reading, and at least as of a couple of weeks ago when I was down there, they don't even have a building to operate out of yet. So it's kind of premature, but, you know, they came in, they got their application filled out. They don't want any delays once they do open the doors. So just first reading, and we'll sit on the second until they actually have a building we can look at.
Okay.
Does a tent count?
Are they going to set up a table or something?
Yeah.
Roadside lemonade.
There you go. Okay.
Thank you. All right. Item 18, we're going to adjourn as the Story County.
I think you need to move to approve the first reading. Oh. This is agenda.
Oh, yeah, I need a motion.
You've got to take a vote. Motion.
We have public comment.
We usually do it as part of the consent agenda on first readings, but this is separate.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is a motion. Yeah, okay. First reading.
That's right. I have to ask for public comment first. Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, we get a motion to approve.
Okay. I move to approve resolution 17-467. Oops, I'm reading the wrong one.
Item 17.
Yep, sorry. I motion to approve as part of the consent agenda the first reading and on-off sale liquor license for Electric Avenue Hotel, LLC, located at 795 USA Parkway, McCarran, Nevada.
And I would suggest, Commissioner McGuffey, the only item of note is this is not part of the consent agenda.
Oh, that's the way the motion is written.
Yeah, this is on the regular agenda.
Okay. I'll restate that then. I make a motion to approve the first reading of an on and off sale liquor license for Electric Avenue Hotel, LLC, located at 795 USA Parkway, McCarran, Nevada.
I'll second your motion.
Move the second to approve the on sale liquor license. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. Item 18, we're going to adjourn as the Story County Liquor License Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of Commissioners.
22.
Yeah. Bringing us now to item number 22. Discussion of possible action, approval of business licenses, second readings, and there are 57 of them today.
Well, and there is some
58 of the first readings.
Well, no, not really. That was the problem with the first readings. Well, the first readings are a little bit botched up, so we'll be working with council over the next 2 weeks to see if we need. We put too many first readings on, to be honest with you. Some of the second readings leaked over to the first readings as well, but the second readings, the good news is, Vanessa and I have checked each other. All second readings are accurate. We just have some duplications of the second readings on the first consent agenda. So we'll clean that all up for the next meeting. But Community Development is recommending approval of all licenses appearing in item 22, which are item A through item triple F. And I guess I have to read these because that's what we always do. Alabag Automotive, Desolatech, Lynx Control Systems, Encore Automation, LLC, Ropening, LLC, Dan Mills Construction, Nevada, Inc., Hesco Services, Inc., Champion Employment Group, Verus Associates, Nevada, LLC, M&L Electrical, Inc., SLE Electronic, GmbH, Harada Engineering, Incorporated, Garo Glass, Inc., Belay Engineering Company, Zion Technology LLC, Amanda Machine Tools America Inc., Norblast LLC, CTH Industrial Services, Precision Control Systems Group LLC, JNR Tadros Inc., Saya America Inc., CDW Direct LLC, Betts Servicios Profesionales, Beck Facility Services, LLC, Acclaimed Inspection Services, Inc., Tooling System Group, R.E. Lewis Refrigeration, Inc., Pinnacle Heating and Air Conditioning, Employ Bridge, Summit Fire Protection of MN.com, they're in either Michigan or Minnesota, I'm not sure which, Steyer Associates, Inc., 3R Automation Incorporated, Complete Robotics, Inc., CBR Enterprises, LLC, Technofa, LLC, Central Striping Service, Black and Veatch Corporation, Homegrown Gastropub, Food Truck, Automation Electric, Inc., Alpha Assembly Solutions, North America Millworks, Inc., RMAC Construction, LLC, Concept Systems, Inc., Reno Tahoe Adventures, LLC, U.S. Granite Nevada, Inc., Coast Machinery Movers of Nevada, Inc., R&E Automated Systems, ABC Employment Holdings, Millwrights for Hire, LLC, Quality Communications, Inc., RKI Instruments, Inc., Human Resources Unlimited, Inc., Level 1 Robotics and Controls, Inc., J.E. Simons Floors, Inc., Intergy, Inc., Presotechnic, LLC, Young Fairbanks Enterprises, LLC, and Compressor Pump Services, Inc., all to be approved, A through FFF.
Thank you. Pat, any comment on the second readings of business licenses? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve A through FFF.
I'll make a motion to approve A through FFF.
I'll second your motion.
We move to second to approve all items from the second readings. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 24, public comment.
Shocking but true. Once again, Sam Toll Goldhill here to consume less than 3 minutes of my public comment time. I have a general question now. This will be the fourth meeting in a row that I have come up and requesting that we move this portion of the meeting to the front. Is that something that I can actually write a letter and ask to be put on the agenda? Is that how that process works? Is it an agendizable item?
Yeah, you could review our policy, and my office can provide you our policy. You make an agenda request form to the clerk. The clerk then forwards to me for suitability.
Okay.
And I'll answer the question, and I'll confer with the chair.
Super. So I'm kind of disappointed that Mr. Thompson has left the room, because this is commentary is kind of directed towards the comments that he made specifically to me with respect to the role of government and private business. We've just read triple F numbers of 50-plus businesses who enjoy our place to conduct business. I think what Mr. Gilman has done out in TRI is spectacular, providing a place for business to come, set up shop, and enjoy Northern Nevada and the benefits of it. The role of government is basically to provide them with the tools that they need to get their job done, and then get out of the way. And so when the inference is made that I'm interested in more regulation and that I want to impede private industry and to impede the free market because the government shouldn't be in the way, I think is a monstrous mischaracterization of where I come from. Small government, free enterprise, free markets is the way to success long term. So I think that, that again, back to some of the conversations we've had today about the role of government, of restrictions and of, participation in business, I think that it's government's job to get out of the way and let private enterprise do their thing. So thank you, Mr. Gilman. Gentlemen.
Appreciate it.
Thank
and
you.
Look forward to meeting. Next.
Nicole Bartz, Story County resident. I echo Mr. Toll's comments and sentiments as far as government and regulation is concerned. I do not favor great government regulation. I favor common sense governance. I am proud to be an activist, if that's a label that wants to be applied to me. The fact that I come to these meetings, the fact that I report on these meetings, is both my right, and it's a service that I provide the community for those who are not able to attend. And also, I'm here as a, not so much a watchdog, but I am watching. The role of the people is to watch what happens in their government. That's what I'm here to do. And if that labels me an activist, right on.
Thank you. Any other public comment? This meeting is adjourned.